When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, you found us again. This is Matt Tebbe. I'm here with Ben Hardman. This is the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Today, we get so many great questions on email. Some we just respond to via email. Some we put on our Patreon platform and respond there because we want to share some more intimate or detailed stories. But today, we got a question about how to cast vision as leaders and how to do that non-coercively, but also not passively. So how do we not fall into the ditch of controlling everything?
That's a good question.
Or just, you know, being passive and like going with the flow. And so every time I say go with the flow, I think of Will Ferrell and Elf, you know, when he's in the mailroom and he gets drunk.
He's a little tipsy.
And he's laying on his back and the guy's like, I gotta just go with the flow. Just go. He's like, no, I gotta get out of the flow. That's why I'm in the mailroom. Anyway, so we're going to get to that real quick. But first, I just wanted to do a couple brief announcements.
Yes. One, we want to continue to thank our Patreon members. There are really good conversations going on there, and your continued support is really important to us and significant.
Thank you. Thank you.
And there's just some good stuff going on there, some conversations that I think are helpful and good. Also, October 8th through the 10th, we are going to be doing the Gravity National Gathering.
Yes.
In Atlanta.
At your church,
which
right,
I'm excited about. At my place, you're hosting. So you get to come and hang out with us. We've done a lot of things in kind of Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, and so I'm excited to get to know our Southern audience.
Yeah.
And some folks from the area and from the community. And so just mark your calendar for that. We'll have lots more information coming out about that. But October 8th through the 10th.
Great.
That's what's happening.
All right. Well, without any further ado, here's the episode. Today is a listener
Q&A episode. So this person has actually been through our Gravity Leadership Academy.
Yes.
And so this person knows. So one of our axioms, friends, if you haven't listened to our axioms series, that's the first several episodes of our podcast. And I'd encourage you to listen to it.
Take courage and do it.
Take courage and do it. But anyway, it lays out kind of we call them our seven axioms for missional theology. They're axioms for seeing the world like Jesus. And we've found that they're a really important foundational assumptions that Jesus seems to make about reality, that if you don't at least grapple with these things and learn to start assuming them, you'll find it very, very difficult to be a disciple of Jesus. That's one way of saying it.
Yeah. So can I read the email?
And then one of our axioms. Here's the deal. One of the axioms I wanted to say, this is what this email is referring to. So one of the axioms that we have is that God cares about all of it more than we do. So whatever you care about, God cares about it more. That seems to be an assumption Jesus made that allowed him to pray and something he taught his disciples. So this question relates to that axiom. Matt,
yes.
You can read the email there.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, I've been binging on Gravity Venues. I don't know what that means.
I think just, I don't know either.
What's a venue? Yeah,
maybe like a channel of content.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Podcasts this time instead of Learning Labs. Here's the question that keeps coming to heart. Is the coronavirus a hoax?
Yep. Which was really weird because he wrote this email back in 2018. So it's a prophetic email.
Let's call him John. John, coronavirus is not a hoax.
Yeah.
But Corona Light is a hoax perpetuated by people to get you to try to drink bad beer. Mm. So don't drink Corona Light.
Okay. All right. Next question.
Next question. Yeah. No, he says, here's a question that keeps coming to heart. If God cares about it more than we do, all about it, more than we do, is vision really all that important or helpful? In other words, if vision is valid, then is it more short-lived adjustments than long-term controlling of outcomes? Hopefully that makes sense.
Yes. So another way to frame this, at least the way that I heard the question, is that I think inside of what John is talking about with vision, I think he's also talking about strategic planning. I think what we would think of as strategic planning. And so the picture that emerges for me is the conflict that John's having in his mind is, if God cares about all of this stuff, that, you know, if I'm a pastor of a church and I'm running my church and I'm leading my church, if God cares about my church more than I do, wither vision and strategic planning. What are they for? Like casting vision, kind of like, you know, leading out into the future, creating energy toward an outcome. You know what I mean? Like all of these things that we learned.
A building campaign, perhaps.
A building campaign or like...
we're leaving our building and we got to find a new place to worship. And so we, you know...
Or just like, what's the theme of the year? And what are we rallying around? And what are we doing this year? You know, that kind of thing. I think that's what the question is. Like, what's the deal with all that stuff?
You know what the theme is for the table for 2020?
Oddly, no, I don't.
2020 vision.
2020 vision. Makes you wonder what percentage of churches have 2020 in their 2020 vision.
You know? If you're listening and you do, then we're laughing with you.
Yeah.
We're laughing with you.
It makes sense.
It's almost too perfect to do it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? You're not going to get a chance really ever to do this again until the year 10,220. Anyway, back to the email. So here's what comes to mind, Matt, for me.
I wonder
if you want to just chat with me about this a little bit. In my mind, I think there's two ditches. So a lot of times, I think when people have we call them a kairos moment. So if I hear that God cares about it more than I do, one of my kairos moments then is, oh, what do I do with vision? And I think that oftentimes what's happening in people's minds is that they think of two ditches that neither one seems to be attractive or godly or faithful. And they're not sure if you're saying one of them is or if there's a different way to go. So the two ditches that emerge for me as I think about this question are, one is that vision and strategic planning are really all about goal setting and controlling outcomes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's a very top down, I'm the pastor of the church, so I have a vision and here's where God is taking us. We're going to do this and this and this and this and this this year. And then we've got a strategic plan to like lay out, here's how it's all going to happen. And then my job as a leader is to like take this vision that's going to mobilize everybody towards action and make sure it happens. That's how we'll know if we've been faithful
vision. How you know you're a good leader.
That's how you know you're a good leader.
Can you execute the strategic plan?
Can you execute the strategic plan? And let's just be charitable and assume that I really believe this vision is from the Lord, right? Like this is God's will for our church.
Like it's A- or better vision.
Yeah, it's like good vision. Yeah. It's not like let's all, you know, burn down the city.
It doesn't violate any of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. So it's good vision. It's we want to, you know, reach more people for Christ or we want to whatever.
Yep.
And I keep pointing over to this wall. You guys can't see this, but for some reason, this is the vision wall. Mm-hmm. So here's the vision.
That's the ditch.
So this is one of the ditches. Here's the vision, and then I try my best to make sure that people get on board and make this happen, and I'll feel good at the end of the year if we accomplished these 18 things that we said we wanted to accomplish and if people are excited and mobilized for 2021.
Okay, so that's
vision. That's one ditch.
Okay, and why is that a ditch?
Well, I think that's a ditch because if I think what John is saying is, if God cares about this more than I do, I think what I'm feeling in that is like, maybe I shouldn't feel all this
pressure,
stress and pressure to make something happen. If God cares about this more than I do, like, why am I working so hard to make people do things?
So the question, you know what I mean? Under the question is, how does my agency participate with God's care?
Yes. And that brings up the next ditch. The other ditch then, okay. So the one ditch is, I'm going to control the outcome. I'm going to make something happen through vision and strategic planning. I think the other ditch, and this is where people's minds go, which is why they have a kairos. The other ditch is, I'm not going to cast any vision.
Hmm.
I'm going to wake up in the morning and just see what happens, because God cares about it more than I do.
Let go and let God.
Yeah, let go and let God just, you know, take the wheel, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
That's one of my celebrity crushes, by the way, Carrie Underwood.
Yeah.
Can I confess that here? My wife knows about this.
Okay, all right. This is a safe place.
She's got a really good voice, and she seems like she has a very nice personality.
She does. It seemed like she
has a heart of gold. And she sings about Jesus.
Yeah. Jesus, take the wheel.
Yeah, somewhere like a 14-year-old Matt has like a little crush on her. Anyway,
we're good.
You brought up Carrie Underwood, and now
this is a safe place.
Flustered.
Yeah.
Mind's going hither and yon with Carrie Underwood pictures, and just keep talking.
Okay, right. So yeah, that's the other ditch. The other ditch I think that people imagine is that I have to let go of vision and strategic planning. They have no place, because in casting vision or strategically planning something, I am being faithless because I'm believing that I care about it more than God does. So I think those are the ditches. I think the ditch is, if God cares about this, what am I doing? Why would I plan anything? Because God's just going to make things happen.
Yeah. So I'm either a control freak or I'm passive and hands off.
That's right.
Those are the two ditches.
Those are the two ditches.
I will take passive and hands off as long as I can still get a paycheck.
Yes. That's the problem, is most of us that might be an interesting question. Like, which ditch feels better to you? Because for some people, that ditch would feel like a torture chamber.
Yeah, right.
For them, they're like, no, keep me in control.
Right.
I want to stay in control.
That's probably you though, right?
It probably is me.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, Matt, as I get older.
You care, you just want to...
I don't know. I feel like I feel like as I get older, I'm like, I just kind of want to hang out at my house with my dog. And just like go for walks, be in nature.
There's a cartoon.
It probably would drive me crazy.
There's a cartoon. I don't know if you've seen this cartoon. It's this guy throwing these papers up in the air.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, forget this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't say forget this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he's throwing it up. And then the next scene is, never mind, it's Thursday. I still need these.
Yeah, yeah.
He's picking everything up.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, that I think is me. It's like I imagine myself loving that, but then it's like probably 2 days of that, and I'd be like,
Never mind.
I need to accomplish something by Wednesday. So yeah.
All right.
Anyway,
so
we probably tend to one of those ditches.
Those are the ditches because we've accepted controlling and passivity into our hearts, like. We're sold on those things.
Right.
More so, it's like an imaginative crisis.
Right. I don't know what else would it be.
This is John's question. If God is present at work, how would I then participate with his work, and how does planning strategically fit into that?
Yeah. That's the question.
Well, John, just Google it, man. Just Google it and see what comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could talk about it.
We could talk about it. And then maybe after we talk about it, this will come up in the Google search. Maybe this podcast episode.
Great. Why don't you throw out some ideas here, Ben? I've got ideas.
All right. Well, one of my ideas is just this, that at least the vision part of this does not need to involve control in any way. Because I think oftentimes we equate vision. I've seen this happen in church conferences before. For example, a church leader of a church denomination was talking one time. I overheard this, and said, hey, our vision for this next decade is that we're going to have X number of leaders ordained and we're going to have X number of churches planted. That's our vision. And I thought, that's not really a vision.
Why not?
I don't think it's really a vision, because that seems to me like a goal. That would be a goal.
Okay, so what's the difference between vision and goal?
I think vision is what you see. Vision is what you see that doesn't exist yet. But I think it's different from the concrete kind of nature of that is just a goal. There's no vision to it. It's just a goal. We want to have this by this time.
Hmm.
You know, that's a goal.
Mm-hmm.
A vision is, here's the reality that I see that I think God is inviting us into. And the vision, that's just it. That's all it is declaring that reality.
So a goal, though, is easy to measure, Ben.
Yes.
So if we say we want to have 150 people mm-hmm. averaging a week worship by the end of 2020,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can assess and measure that,
yeah,
right? But whatever this nebulous vision you're talking about, mm-hmm. I wouldn't even know how to start measuring that,
yeah,
or assessing whether or not we did it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why goals get confused for vision.
I think that's why they get confused for vision is because it is difficult to measure a vision that you can't really measure. That's almost a confusion of categories in my mind. I think a vision is like what we see that's not here in its fullness, and it provides an orientation for us.
So can I give an example of this?
Yeah.
One of the pieces of vision for the table is we want to empower and equip people in our church to discern mission locally and then gather around what's discerned locally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's the vision. So we are investing in and equipping people unto that,
yeah.
And we've begun to reap some benefits of that, mm-hmm. meaning we're hosting a couple people who are seeking asylum in America, some people from Cameroon and Uganda, in families in our churches, and that's something that people discerned locally as a way for us to be more than just, you know, we can all be outraged about kids in cages or mm-hmm. people entering illegally. We can all be outraged about that. Or we can maybe open our homes and create places of hospitality.
Yeah.
Right?
Some way to have some skin in the game of mission.
Right. Yeah. So that was the vision then. And that's different than the goal of we want to host 7 refugees by the end of 2020.
Right. Yeah. Or the goal of assuming, because part of the, and I think we should talk about this, part of our connection with refugees in our local church was a surprise. We weren't looking for it. You know, like we hadn't predetermined that mm-hmm. this is how we're going to locally discern mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that part of vision, it has to be, I think it has to be, vague is the wrong word, but it has to be, we can't take vision and assume how it's going to work itself out. And assume that will mean that the vision is taking place. We have to cast the vision in a different realm. So, like you said, we want people to locally discern mission. We want to be able to do that. So that's a pretty open-ended statement. Now, if we would have said, and here's the how we'll know that that's happening, we will have X number of missional communities, you know, in X number of neighborhoods by, you know, 2021 or something like that.
So it's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it strikes me then that. In that vision, we can assess how we're doing, not necessarily based upon outcomes. If God's present at work and God's always,
mm-hmm.
God cares about it more than we do, then we aren't in charge of outcomes. God is.
Yes.
But what we do is we have agency over, are we investing in these people?
Yeah.
Do they know what these words mean?
Yeah.
Can they reflect back to us mm-hmm. and perceive and understand what mission is, what it isn't, how to discern grace, what's a kairos moment, how to gather around it, mm-hmm. how to mobilize people for mission.
Yeah.
Or are those just buzzwords for them?
Yeah.
Do they have no,
yeah.
is there any experiential sort of flypaper on which for that those words to stick?
Mm.
Or is that just abstract
abstractions? Yeah, so that's good.
So this we do actually, assess and measure something.
We do, that's true, yeah. We are definitely doing that. Like part of the evidence, do we know that this is happening, right? And we would say, yes, we do, because there's 2 refugees living with us, you know, possibility of more. But I think part of the work of leadership then is to talk about that vision, to cast that vision. But the vision is, here's how we see mission. Here's what we would love to see. Here's, the vision that we have is that these kinds of communities would be forming all over the city, and they would be ministering on mission in all kinds of different neighborhoods, in all kinds of different relational networks, that kind of thing. And then when an opportunity like this one comes up, then I think the task of leadership is to name that and say, hey, this seems like something that God has brought to us. Because we've had our eyes tuned into this reality of mission, we've had our eyes tuned into this to this reality of the kingdom, this is something that we're paying attention to. And then I think we can call people into that, call people to participate, ask the right questions, and then begin to name for people, this is it. This is how it's happening. which I think gives people more and more concrete representation about, oh, the vision is happening, which further opens their eyes to it happening further.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
So what I hear a little bit of a distinction here, and we're just using language technically here to draw distinctions rather than saying these words always mean these things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
But what you're saying is, like, if I have a strategic plan, my focus is on managing external outcomes and metrics that I could so we could have hosted 7 refugees by the end of this year, but it may not have been what God is doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It may be something we're kind of doing in our own strength and making things happen. And the cost of that is we're missing where we could be investing our time and resources in good ideas, right? Hosting more refugees isn't a bad idea.
Right.
But if there's not grace there, sometimes we are kicking against the goads a bit, you know? Like, it's hard. It's like, it's all hard work, but it's work out of our flesh rather than work and aligned with the Spirit.
Yeah, in cooperation with God's grace.
So then a vision, though, is about things that we do have agency over, which aren't necessarily externals, but but forming and shaping of people, orienting and directing like an institutional focus.
Yeah.
Right? Am I hearing this right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
I think the way I put it, I'm just reading my email back to this guy.
Oh, you didn't tell me you had an email.
Oh yeah, what's right here?
Look at that.
But I'm looking at my email back to this guy and thinking, I think it lines up with what you're saying here. So I wrote to him, I said, vision isn't the same thing as strategic planning or execution. Mm. Vision is just what you see. It's a picture you paint for people that helps them move towards something together. Again, it doesn't try to control them and make it happen, but it helps to have some vision to know where are we going together. A leader, I think, paints a picture of that. And I think that's something that you can do. If God cares about it more than you, that's fine. You can trust that that God will speak to people as you paint the picture. So it's the reason we are together as a church. It propels us into the future. It's not a foretelling of the future, and it's not a trying to make the future happen. It's a picture of the future that helps us move toward what we're doing together. It's framing reality for people so that we can move together. Hmm. And the story I thought of is, the Israelites inheriting land in the Old Testament, and they send in the spies. Remember this?
Yes.
Caleb and Joshua. And they come back. They both see the same thing. Caleb and Joshua both see the same thing. Well, Caleb and Joshua and the tens, right? The 10 spies. Caleb and Joshua come back with, we can do this. God is with us. The land is full of giants. Yes, you know, but like, we can do this. God is with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other 10 come back with the vision, we can't do this. Right? So which one was true? This is a test.
I need
I'm just kidding.
I feel like I'm having flashbacks.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
You know, when I was a youth pastor.
What is the gospel?
It seems like, Joshua and Caleb were the ones who had God's mind about it.
Yeah. They were able to see the land and see the grace that God was giving them for it. And the other, basically both visions are true. We can't do it, you know? And that's actually the one they followed, right? So we can't do it was the one they followed because in their own strength, they couldn't really do it. But Caleb and Joshua had the mind of the Lord. They said, with the Lord's help, we can actually do this.
Yes.
So
what am I taking from that?
I think it just further helps delineate, for example, the difference between strategic planning and vision. How are we going to take the land? What are the next steps? I think that's part of it too. And maybe we should talk about that too. Well, like, how do we take steps together?
I would
and plan strategically.
Yeah. And I would even say like, so you and I, so here's another example. It's really hard to talk about these things abstractly, I think.
Yeah.
It's much easier to build generalities from particularities than it is to talk about generalities and apply them to particularities.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a sort of a given that you and I have in terms of how we discern things. But
yeah.
We've been trying to start our local discipleship groups for months and months and months.
Yeah.
And if I've felt at, I don't know, dozens and dozens of points, I just need to make a decision, make this happen, and kind of decree mm-hmm. how this is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like every time I did that, I just stopped and I was like, is this my impatience? Is this my need to resolve ambiguity?
Mm.
Right? Is this my lack of wanting? Am I listening to projected and like almost fantasies of people being like people griping or grousing or grumbling because they're obviously wilderness people,
mm-hmm.
like who are upset at me for not leading more efficiently?
Yeah.
Like I just had to check like what am I moving out of here to resolve the ambiguity that I don't think is resolved,
mm-hmm.
but just to resolve it because I'm done with it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so every time I just stopped and just kind of waited, and mm-hmm. so finally some more things appeared that made it increasingly obvious what we needed to do. We're mm-hmm. going to meet on Sunday mornings, and so I moved tentatively forward with that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, in the last week, another thing has changed. So we're going to go from two groups to three groups this Sunday.
Yeah.
Because our groups are too big, and because Ben, you decided to start doing some pastoring.
In my spare time,
right?
I thought I could probably
manage
it. You're
just going to add this to your list.
Yeah.
No, so Ben's going to also help lead these groups. He's also leading another group, and so things are emerging. But here's what I'm noticing about this: I have this tendency to want to resolve ambiguity, to act out of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
to be seen as decisive and mm-hmm. efficient
yeah.
and a good leader.
Yeah.
All of those things can shut down my sensitivity and participation in what God's doing.
Yes,
there's so much ambiguity in Scripture, so much dealing with things not being the way they could be or should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesus is constantly around people doing things he doesn't want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
There's just so much of that.
Yeah.
And so I'm learning that a lot of my leadership instincts to manage outcomes come from this anxiety, this controlling self that wants to basically manage external realities mm-hmm. so that internally I feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking of Steve Cuss, who we had on the podcast a while back. He talks really, really well about this. His book, Managing Leadership Anxiety, is really clarifying when it comes to some of these things. And I think that's really important part, and it's part and parcel of everything we do. One of our other axioms is whatever God does through you, he also does is in you.
Mm-hmm.
And so our leadership is not just this sort of skill that we have that we apply to our communities. It's actually the crucible in which God is sanctifying us. It's and as we learn to pay attention to our own anxieties and our leadership, we actually become better leaders to help others pay attention to their anxieties and grow in our ability to kind of live in Christ. And I wanted to say too that just like you were saying, Matt, that your anxiety would push you to make a decision and control an outcome, our anxiety can also prevent us from making a decision because we don't want to be seen as, you know, like you might want to be seen as decisive, but maybe there's another leader that's like, I don't want to be seen as mean. And so I can't make this decision, right?
Yeah.
So the same anxiety that propels us into action unfaithfully can prevent us from action, which is equally as unfaithful, right? So the key is to be able to recognize your own, we call them Kairos moments, to be able to recognize, you mentioned the word pivoting out of, and what I hear you say in that is like, what's my motivation here? Why am I so eager to make this decision?
What work would this decision do for me?
Yeah. Yeah,
I want to tell myself this is good leadership or this is me helping my community.
Right.
But really it's resolving some need I have.
Yeah.
That maybe God wants to meet.
Yeah.
Maybe God wants to meet me there. Maybe he wants me to hold that space open and not resolve that.
Yeah. 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 And that's the good news behind all of our I mean, this has been so helpful for me. The good news behind all of my leadership anxieties, the question that John asks is kind of a, what I hear underneath it is a little bit of anxiety about like, I'm not sure what to do here about casting vision. But I think what it always comes down to for us is pay attention to where you feel anxious or afraid or angry, and meet God in those places. Because like making decisions out of those places almost never does any good work for us.
Yeah.
Right. We can tell ourselves it's good work, but it almost never does any good work. And the good news that's behind all of that for me, that's been so helpful for me, is realizing that God wants to meet me there, not to scold me for feeling afraid, not to give me a pep talk, not to try to inspire me to be a better leader, but to legitimize the need I have to say, I know that you need to be reassured right now. And I will reassure you, and I'll give you, like, it's knowing that the Lord wants to meet me in these places.
Yeah.
And meet those needs so that I don't have to make a quick decision in order to get my, in order to lower my anxiety. I can meet the Lord in the midst of my anxiety and know his presence there.
Yes. One other thing I'm noticing about strategic plans, or I mean, just plans. I mean, we mm-hmm. make plans all the time.
Yeah.
But I think that in order for us not to get caught in these two ditches of passivity or being a control freak, is we make plans, right? And then James talks about this. You rich people who say, so-and-so, I'm going to do this tomorrow, I'm going to do that tomorrow. Like, you're such a, you think that your affluence and wealth are the means whereby you control the world,
yeah,
is what James is saying.
Yeah.
And he's saying, actually, what if you just permitted the Lord to interrupt those plans, if the Lord wills, so-and-so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the way I understand James. And the way we inhabit that is we... And some people, this causes kairoses for some people, but like, A, we see plans that fail as grace. So it's God telling us something or revealing something we need to know, rather than failure isn't an option, or failure means I'm a bad leader, or failure means we didn't try hard enough. So whatever failure happens, we can experience all those feelings, but ultimately failure is a communication from God to us. So we expect failure to happen.
Yeah.
We embrace failure. At least this is part of the vision. Failure, failure doesn't mean that if nobody shows up for the DNA group, it doesn't mean like I did a bad job or they're bad people. It just means, what didn't I see? What didn't I notice? You know?
Yeah.
And two, we recalibrate all the time.
Yeah.
So we pulled these groups together last Sunday.
Yeah.
I had 11 people in mine. Another young man in our church had 12 people in his. Then four more people came out of the woodwork during the week and said, hey, I want to, like, they literally crawled out from under the floorboards.
Yeah.
No, and they just,
where were you this whole time?
You were spying on our freedom. Yeah. They just said, hey, we want to be in this too. So now these groups are like, our groups are typically no more than eight. So now they're just really unmanageable.
Really big. Yep.
Then you step forward and say, hey, I feel like I should lead a little bit. So this Sunday, we're going to have a meeting with our people. This is going to be news to them. And we're going to say, here are the factors that are complicating this meeting. Here's our best guess on how to resolve that. And I know this is difficult. I know this is hard because we just started meeting last week and this was a group you fell in love with. You guys are already doing trust falls and sharing your life together. But like we're going to take these troops and make them three. And I think there's just permission over time. Like we give each other permission to recalibrate.
Yeah.
And then we create the expectation that there will be calibrations and recalibrations in this. So don't fall in love with any form, with any decision. Right? Our attachment isn't to the external form.
Yeah.
Our attachment is to the Lord.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to leave Trophimus sick in Miletus.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you got to just, sometimes you have a dream about a Macedonian telling you to come.
Yeah.
You know,
and sometimes that happens right after the place you thought you were going to go, you were prevented from going.
Right. Right. And so, so I guess for us, then, we just expect that we'll make plans and that they will change.
Yeah.
And that provokes a lot of kairoses for people who like to spell everything out, put it on a spreadsheet, engineer things, blah, 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 blah. And people who like nothing but spontaneity, who don't want any plans. Because you have to make an, you have to orient yourself, you have to direct yourself, you have to make a plan in order for change to happen.
Yeah.
So the image that comes to mind then, let's just say, like, if you're in the control freak ditch, like, and you want to get across a body of water, you need gas for the motor. You need to know the direction to point the bow. You need a compass, and then you just put that motor in the water, and you just hightail it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just get across that water, right? Yeah. Those of us who like are more easygoing, passive, we sort of get in the boat and we pull the motor up and we just pray, God, wherever you want me to go, I'll go. You know, and we just kind of float.
We wait for the Lord to turn the motor on.
If you want me to get across you'll row send a wave.
There.
You'll row me there. Jesus, take the oar. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's, and then, but here's what I think. I think we have to go, God, where would you want me to go? I think maybe Caesarea. All right. So we get in a boat and we put up a sail and we prepare to go to Caesarea.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then we see how the wind blows.
Yeah.
And we see, you know, reports we get from Caesarea on the way, and we see how people are doing in the boat. And sometimes we have to, sometimes we get a headwind, so we have to go up lake a bit, right, just to make it towards Caesarea.
Yeah.
And we go up lake a bit, and we see another town on the shore, and everybody's moved to go there, so we go there. Like that's the kind of relationship I think between God cares about it more than we do, and how do we make plans? And that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah, what you're describing, Matt, is what,
what am I describing?
In the leadership world is called adaptive leadership.
Oh, yeah.
That's adaptive leadership in its essence. And one of the best metaphors I've heard about adaptive leadership from Todd Bolsinger is from his book, Canoeing the Mountains, where he talks about the Lewis and Clark expedition, where their expectation was, they had a vision, right, to find the Pacific Ocean and to find the waterway. What did they call it? Remember the something passage?
Is that Northwest Passage? Yeah.
Was that it?
Yeah, that's
so they were looking for that. And so their expectations, their assumptions were that there is a waterway. There's a river that goes all the way to the Pacific Ocean. And so they prepared and planned for river travel.
Not
right?
True,
Lewis and Clark were very, they were river experts, and they brought along people who knew how to navigate rivers, canoe people. But then, of course, you know, anybody in seventh grade geography knows what they hit. They hit the Rocky Mountains. And they had no idea how to get over mountains. They didn't know what was past the next pass. And so they had to go from expertise-oriented leadership into adaptive leadership, where they had to make a lot of these decisions on the fly. They had to learn and then make a step and then learn and then make a step, realizing that they could not learn 15 steps at once. They had to learn one step at a time. And it's a hugely needed skill, I think, in today's church world, because the culture we're navigating is very different than it used to be. It's not just rivers all the way to the Pacific. There's the Rocky Mountains. We weren't expecting this. You know, we've had conversations on this podcast several weeks ago, you know, talking about all the new world of like gender identities and all this stuff that we as Christians, we were not expecting to have to deal with this stuff.
Mm-mm.
But we have to deal with it, and we can't deal with it by going back and doing another 3-year degree on, you know, postmodern ministry, and now there's 15 steps. You can't know the 15 steps once.
Yep.
You just have to take one step and learn.
Yeah.
And listen.
So if this interests you more, I think Canoeing the Mountains, Todd Bolsinger, is a great resource,
a good book
that lays out the kind of leadership we're describing that's able to hold making decisions, orienting ourselves in a direction, trusting God cares about it more than we do, but also not just going passive or being a control freak.
Yeah.
And really, it is adaptive leadership. It's learning how to be agile within decisions that doesn't disorient and confuse and frustrate the people you're leading,
right,
but empowers them, and they become part of the team that's recalibrating and discerning and moving.
Yep. So that book, Managing Leadership Anxiety, is another good one to look up. And I also,
The Bible? You want to mention the Bible?
Well, I should probably mention the Bible as a Christian. No, I wanted to say Gravity Leadership Academy. I know
what?
We talk about it a lot, but I'm serious.
Really?
Gravity Leadership Academy. Don't act so surprised,
Do we do
Matt.
This?
This is what it's all about. It's about 10 months of actual training, not just a book. Books are great, but it's not just a book of information. It's actual training. You get to bring your own life, your own ministry to the to the context of the call. And so these kinds of questions can come up, and we can say, all right, John, like, where are you experiencing this tension? You know, is it time for the 2020 vision campaign and you're not sure you want to do it and everybody's expecting it? All right, well, we can talk about that. How's the Lord at work in the midst of that?
Yeah.
Where's the Lord at work in the midst of your anxiety about that?
Yeah.
About your congregation's expectations? And we really help coach people through that stuff. And so anyway, I want to commend it to you. We're always starting new cohorts.
If you commend
check it out.
Then I will recommend it.
Yep. Recommend and recommend.
Again, all these words, I don't understand the difference between them and why we have Like when I say I want to commend something to you, or I say I want to recommend something to you, does that just mean I've commended it to you before and now I'm doing it again?
Right. You didn't listen to me the first time, so now I got to recommend it.
No, I think the difference between reading Canoeing the Mountains and going through the Gravity Leadership Academy is Canoeing the Mountains tells you about a reality that you may not know how to enter.
Yeah.
In the Gravity Leadership Academy, we describe a reality and we train you how to inhabit it.
Yes.
And I don't know anybody else that does that, that breaks down this kind of leadership into discrete, practical, concrete practices that actually helps you increase your capacity and change your imagination for what's possible.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Are you hearing me here?
That's a good recommendation.
All right.
No, it is. It is really important, I think, to hear that we're, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I always feel a little bit uncomfortable because we're not trying to be like braggadocious about it, but honestly,
I'll toot your horn, you toot mine. Yeah, that way we don't have to.
All right. But it is. It's the difference between reading about how Lewis and Clark got across the mountains and being in the expedition and, you know, being led by Sacagawea and, you know, everything that they had to do. It's the difference between getting across the mountains and reading about how they did it.
Yep.
So it makes a big difference in a lot of leaders' lives.
If you're hitting mountains and you want to learn how to cross them, with a hat tip to Todd Bolsinger, join the Gravity Leadership Academy. That's all we have time for today. Hopefully you have gathered something from this that is helpful or has provoked another question for you. Please reach out to us, podcast@gravityleadership.com. We love your questions. It helps generate content for you and for us. And obviously, if you're having the question, we trust other people are too.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks, friends. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebbe, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.